Good afternoon. Everybody hear me okay? I can hear myself coming back, so that's hopefully a good sign, and hopefully I won't feedback either. So you enjoying mix so far?
Yes.
End of the first day, a fun time. Well, today we're going to do one of the sessions which has the second longest title, I think, of any of the sessions that are out here. And no, this isn't the title that I originally proposed. The original title I actually proposed was Becoming an RX Pusher on the Windows Phone 7. When they saw that title, they said, well, it sounds like it's a pharmaceutical convention. Weren't quite sure about that one. And so maybe I'm trying to push you on some drugs. And honestly, I am. Because I think that this stuff is so cool that everybody needs to be using this. In part, it sort of comes from Link and Language Integrated Query. And if you're familiar with me at all, you know I'm one of the authors of Link in Action, a book by Manning Press that came out several years back about Link. And just a little bit about me. I'm Jim Woolley. I'm a consultant with Solemn Consulting, author, MVP. I'm actually an MVP in Visual Basic. Ooh. And we'll be actually seeing some C# on Visual Basic both in this presentation. And also, to be honest, I'm not going to be dragging and dropping a lot of controls on forms. It's none of that. All of this is about code. So if you don't like code, maybe another session is good. But since everybody's still sitting here, hopefully you do like code. That's enough about me. I want to really focus today on what is RX and how you'd be able to use that. I'm going to be doing it in the context of the phone today, but you can actually use RX against a lot of different platforms, and we'll see all the different platforms that RX does support. So if we were to give you a quick elevator pitch for RX, or I like to think of it as sort of a TWT definition, if you can summarize the technology within 140 characters or less, you're doing a pretty good job. And so here is the TWT definition of reactive extension. It's a library for composing asynchronous and event-based programs using observable collections. Now, of course, when we make it so concise, it might be a little heavy to try to read. But to break this down, first of all, it's about composition. So we're taking lots of different pieces and starting to plug them in place and adding more and more functionality. If we were to just do one function, RX doesn't give you as much of the power as if we're able to take a lot of these different sources of information and start bringing them together in new and creative ways. So the composing is a key piece of RX. Second key piece of this is asynchronous and event-based programming. Okay, so with Link, for example, we had the ability to compose over observable or over enumerable collections, sets of data where we knew what that data was, right? But that was all synchronous, and they all had blocking calls. With RX, we're able to do this over other sources of data that can be now asynchronous, so we're no longer blocking the UI, for example. We can have things happening off of background threads, or we can have things when we do a begin invoke and then have a callback that's in an end invoke pattern. But it's a pattern that we're able to do and not have to worry about all the plumbing. We don't have to worry about passing a bunch of lambda expressions to say, okay, this is the callback that you're going to do when you get the result back and things like that. So that's the asynchronous portion. Event-based programming is another way of doing asynchronous programming. Okay, so whenever we get an event, we just respond to that. And we don't have to interrupt a whole thread to wait for another event to come. We just respond to events as they come across the stack. So both of those sort of lead into what's an observable collection. Well, we know what enumerable collections are. Those are things where we have a set of values that were predefined. A database is a good example of a standard kind of data store where we know all of those values and we know it's a finite set at that point. With observable collections, these are ones that are going to announce themselves anytime that there's another one that comes around. So an event actually is an observable type of collection. An event sort of uses that pub-sub implementation, so we have these things which we are going to be observing. And the observable pattern is sort of the pub-sub type of implementation. These observable collections also may or may not ever produce any values, right? And these values may not exist when you create your query. They may exist at some point in the future. And so then we can respond to each one of those values as it comes along. So that's sort of the clinical definition of reactive extensions. And reactive extensions you're going to be able to use, as I said, in a lot of different platforms. We can use that in Silverlight. Where it first came out was in the Silverlight toolkit for Silverlight 3. So you can use it again in Silverlight 3, Silverlight 4. .NET 4 has the observable interfaces built in. .NET 3.5 did not have those observable interfaces built in, but there's a library that you can add to include the observable interfaces, and then you can do everything that you need from that point. They've also included versions for XNA 4 and also XNA for the Zune, so that you'll be able to use them in those particular environments. And there's actually one for JavaScript as well, RxJS. And with the JavaScript implementation, if you're interested in that, you like what you see in today's presentation, highly recommend tomorrow going to Bart DeSmet's talk. Bart's actually on the Rx team, and he's going to be talking specifically about reactive extensions for JavaScript tomorrow. So the one we're going to be focusing on today is the Windows Phone. One of the reasons why we're focusing on Windows Phone is that Rx, it actually shipped in the ROM of the Windows Phone itself. And subsequently, there have been additional sets of libraries that have updated the version. What we're going to be doing today is using the actual bits that shipped with the RTM of the phone. And if you want to use the additional versions, you can get them. One way to get it is off of Nougat, and I'll show you the links in which you can use to get all the sources later in the presentation. Also, I'll let you know at this point that all of the samples that I'm going to be doing today, don't have to worry about furiously writing everything down, because I will have all my samples available on my website, thinklink.com. That's thinklink.com. So that's the many flavors of it. And as I said, we're going to focus on Windows Phone for today. So let's see what's the problem with the imperative model that we have, or actually the declarative model here, but the declarative model over enumerables. And where does this sort of break down in what we're trying to do with things on the phone? So here's a fairly simple link kind of query. I love links, so I'll use the link implementation here. From candy and bag of candies, where the candy has nuts, group the candy into group candies, and then select the name and then how many candies were in each one of those groups. When I do this in smaller presentations, I actually pull people up on stage and we pass candies around stage, but they didn't want me to do that today. So we'll just do this through a lot of PowerPoint animation here. One of the great things about Link is that you're able to see this and understand what it's doing pretty easily. It's fairly straightforward and understandable. You don't have to worry about all the plumbing goo that goes on under the covers. We can just declare what it is that we want, and then it can figure out how it wants to do it. So as we then iterate over these results, nothing actually happens until we start for-reaching over the results. We have deferred execution. So we can compose a lot of additional things on this, right? But once we say for each, then the for each says, okay, well, I want to get the next and calls move next, and it has to wait until it actually gets a result. Now move next then calls up the stack to the next value of move next because it doesn't have anything yet. We're setting up internal state machines on every single one of these method calls. So we go up to the move next to get group by candy. It doesn't have anything either. Then we go up to where the candy has nuts. Well, I don't have anything yet either. Now we have the bag of candies. Do you have anything in your bag of candies? Oh, yes, there's an Almond Joy. We figured out that the Almond Joy, yes, that does go through our where filter, and we pass it on down the stack. Now we turn around, we call on next, or move next to get the next value, and so forth and so on until we get our next bag of candies. And no, Hershey's does not have nuts, so that filters out. We don't go all the way back down to the select. We stay on where and just iterate back at where, go back from where, and move up to move next till we have another one that has nuts and so forth. And one of the problems is here that our UI, if our UI was bound to the results of this, then the UI has been blocked until we've had all of our results at this point. And on this grouping operation, it actually gets blocked until we then get the final false or there are no other values in this result set, and we pass that on down. So that could be a challenge. How do we deal with this and have our UI blocked while we're doing all these iterations? It very possibly is this bag of candy maybe from a web service, and it takes a long time for us to get the results of that web service. We don't want our UI blocked, and in fact, we can't have our UI blocked in the way that the Windows Phone requirements are stated, right? So to put it in another way, here's the problem with IEnumerable. IEnumerable, we have basically three methods. Well, really two of them that are only ever used. Reset's never really used either. We have current and move next. Both of them are functions, or they're return values. And so since they have a return value, we can't do anything until we actually get that return value. So we're blocked in the process of everything that's going on inside of that. That could be a problem. So how are we able to fix this problem? Well, the team looked at a whole slew of different options. They went through mathematical formulas, and I'm not going to bore you with the mathematical stuff. If you're interested in the mathematical stuff, go to the videos on Channel 9. They'll cover it in excruciating detail. I want to get into what's the practical implications and what can we actually use in our applications. But in the long run, what they came up with was they said, well, the enumerator actually is sort of a mathematical duo with an iObserver or observer pattern. And with the observer pattern, we can then have a set of methods, uncompleted, which says we're done, and then it's just going to pass to whoever's listening to it, then, oh, I'm done, and then be done with it. We also have onNext, and onNext is the real key one. So before, when we were calling moveNext, and then we had to get the current, moveNext, and get the current, moveNext, and get the current, with observable, all we say is onNext, and here's my value, and then I can go off my merry way. You can do what you need to do. I don't need to wait. Just do it, and I don't care. Now, there is one other one here, on error. And actually, when we're doing the enumerable implementation, you'll see that at any point during the process, you could have an error in there. And so how do you handle the errors inside of enumeration? That can get a little tricky if you want to do it in a fine-grained method where you might want to repeat a process internally and things like that. So that's one of the reasons why they added the error handler inside of the iObserver. So at any point during the stack, you can then exit out and handle an error and then either exit out of the processes, finish off all processes on all threads, for example, or maybe just continue on. There's actually, being a VB guy, I have to love this one. There's actually a method in Rx that is on error, resume next. So there's cases where you might want to do that. I don't care if there's an error. Let me maybe log it, but just keep going. So that's the main core difference between the iEnumerator and iObserver. And because we're now saying, okay, here's a value, and then I'll just keep going my merry way, now we can start doing things asynchronously rather than having to have everything synchronous and waiting for that value to come back. So when we have our pushing with the iObservables, where iEnumerables, we have to pull for each value. Give me the next value, give me the next value. With iObservables, we can then just push you. Here's a value. Here's a value. So again, nothing happens. And as I said, this bag of candies, it may well be that it's giving us values and we don't care about it because we haven't subscribed to it yet. Right? There's two different kinds of observables. One is a hot observable and one's a cold observable. With a cold observable, it doesn't start giving you values until you actually ask for the first value. With a hot observable, it'll start giving you values regardless of whether you've asked for anything or not. But once you then do subscribe to it, now we're hooking up our pub and subscribe. It's sort of like a tree falling in the forest. Does it make a noise? Well, does it depend on whether anybody's listening to it or not? Yeah, right? So here we subscribe. We're now listening to all of these things that are coming down the pipeline. And subscribe passes up all the way through the query. We start getting our values, and now they're going to issue on next. Here's the next one. Here's the next. And it goes through the pipeline, passing that value on down, and we get all the way down to the bottom. Now, while that's happening, we may get an on next that gives us something else. It may have been after the first one got processed. It may or not be. So, for example, here's one that we haven't finished processing the first one, and the second one keeps on going on through. A little hard to illustrate that in a PowerPoint presentation, but okay. And so we may or may not ever get uncompleted. For example, if you're using this to monitor event logs, you may never know that the event log has finished giving you new events, unless you have a system shutdown, and at that point you're probably not going to get an uncompleted either. But we keep on processing potentially until we get our uncompleted, and we're able to then evaluate the results. Make sense? Okay. Probably it'll make even more sense when we actually look at some code, do some actual demos, and start to play with this a little bit more. So let's move over to my demo computer here. And I've got to wake it back up again. Everybody see the code back there? I tried to make it big enough that we can see it easily enough. Hope so at this point. So here is a little sample application. We have dice. Well, we're in Vegas. We'll do some dice games. How's that sound, right? And let's actually just go ahead and run this application first. I'll do it over in the emulator here. So with our dice game, we have a series of die that we may want to be paying attention to, and I can roll these dice, and notice that I'm waiting until the entire process gets done before it allows me to do anything else here. Let's see here, I got two fours. Let's see if I can get all fours. Nope, not on that one. Remind me not to go gambling tonight. We can play the game. I'm not doing any scoring on this. This is all just saying where we have this collection of dice, where the dice isn't frozen, where I haven't selected that particular dice to re-roll, then roll the dice, and down here, pour each over those, and set the dot count to the number of dice that you have, and just use data binding for binding up the UI on this one. Right? I'm not a designer. I tried to get some designers to help me out on the UI, and they didn't get back to me, so that's why it looks the way it does. I was a little guilty about that, coming to Mix with all the design people that are here, figuring you might not like that design of it, but hey. Part of what I had to do, I wanted to make it so this was a geeky kind of dice, so of course we have to have our 20-sided die, right? The 20-sided die actually takes a little bit longer because what I'm doing is I'm putting a thread sleep on the result of the die. So each one of these could be coming back at a different period in time. Okay. Just a little bit of a background on what's going on there. So that's the core of the application. Now, how do we take this from this blocking call and now make this asynchronous and start using these observers and be able to compose more richer kinds of constructs over these observable collections? Well, let's first take the list of items here that we have and make this an observable collection that we can start working with. In this particular case, it's a known list of values, so this is going to be a cold observable. So here I'm going to say from the items, then to observable. Now that's going to be an observable collection. So with an observable collection, you don't for each over the results of those. You subscribe, and then when you subscribe, have whatever subscribing to it do something with those values. So here I'm going to say query, subscribe. And subscribe can take an observer. So here's your pub sub type of implementation, right? And you can go off and create a whole class, which is an observer class, which then handles each one of the onNext methods that come out of it. But a shortcut to doing that is actually using the action of T onNext overload. So here I can just pass in a lambda statement that says, whenever I get a result, then do something with that. And what I'm going to do is just what I had inside the for each. Come on. And remove that. And now we've taken the enumerable collection and made an observable collection. Now, if I actually run this one, because I'm doing a thread sleep and everything's happening on the same thread, we're actually going to continue to have this as a blocking call. Notice we have to wait until it's done before it gets our results and before we can do any sliding down of the number of dice, for example. So it's still not quite what we want it to be. What I need to do at this point is then say, whenever I'm doing that roll, however that roll happens, do that on some other thread, right? So here what I can do is I'm going to say observable and when I'm doing the selection, I need to do a method on top of this. So if you'll pardon me changing this where clause just slightly to the where extension method. And this isn't required. It's just that it makes the code a little easier to read in when we continue on. From link perspective, I will often interchange the lambda syntax with the query syntax. I find the query syntax is often easier if there's a longer query, and the lambda syntax is easier if it's a shorter type kind of construct. Also, it depends on whether you have the query syntax for these additional methods. So one of the additional methods that I'm going to include here is going to be to observe on. And the observe on takes a scheduler, says, where or when am I actually going to do this work? And so the scheduler in this particular case is going to be from the thread pool. Now, if you're doing this against full WPF or WinForms or full .NET, you're going to be able to also do it off of the task parallel library or task pool. But in the case of the phone, you just have the threads and the thread pool to be able to work with at this point. So I'm going to observe it on the thread pool at that point. That's going to cause this randomizer to occur in the background. Now, I'm on a background thread. Before I then do anything back to the UI, I need to make sure to get back on the dispatcher thread. So here I'm going to observe on again. And I'm going to take a specific instance of this observe on to get back to the dispatcher thread. So just a couple extra lines here. Pretty straightforward and easy to rock, I think. When I run this one now, and now I start rolling, you'll start seeing that the values as they come back are now coming back asynchronously. I don't have to wait to then change the roll up to, let's say, 7 or 8, and I can do all of this while that's still working. Cool? So we're starting to get some asynchronous process. That's really the, sort of the first stage of what it is that we're going to be doing with this application. Any questions so far? No? Let me move real quick back over to the slide deck. So we've taken our application, moved it from enumerable to observable. Now what is it that we want to actually do with this observable? Well, let's take a look at the interfaces first. The core interfaces for reactive extensions, we have 4 of them. iObservable, which has one method which takes something that's going to subscribe to it. So who's listening to me? And what's going to be listening to me is an iObserver. This iObserver then has on next, on error, on completed, so that the observable can then say, here's another one, on next, here's another one, on next, and keep on going. Now, sort of in the middle between the two of these, there's an iSubject that they've included which combines both of those. And typically, you're only going to use an iSubject if you have a stateful object. And we try to avoid stateful objects as much as possible. Because whenever you have a stateful object, you have the potential for side effects. Whereas if you're just doing some of these combinators, doing the monadic comprehensions, I have to throw that one out. Eric would kill me if I didn't. So if you're doing those kinds of things, then you're always going to be returning another value. You're not necessarily going to be changing the state of the first value necessarily. But if you have something where you're going to be changing the state, that's where you would use a subject. And the subject is both an observable and an observer. It works on both sides. Okay. And I also showed you the other one, the iScheduler. That's going to be when do you do things? Maybe where do you do things? Like another thread? Potentially, maybe sometime in the future. Where do you do something else up in the cloud? I don't know. That's a possibility. It's an interesting possibility, I think. It's not there right now. But I'm sure that'll be coming at some point. So, with those core interfaces working on these kinds of things, they've added all of the link methods over top of these core interfaces so that anything pretty much that we're able to do with link that makes sense, we're going to be able to do using that link syntax over these observable collections. Now, there are a couple actually which don't quite work the way we'd hope. When I first started trying to do this, I tried to do this with using order by. Order by doesn't work very well if we don't know when the end of this list is going to occur. Because we could be that we're going to give out in order the first 3 values. Here's your first 3 values. The 4th value comes, oh, it was supposed to be the first one. Oops. Right. So they give you the ability to do some windowing over these operations to say, okay, for this 5 seconds, order those. For the next 5 seconds, order those. Or for the first 20, give me the first 20 ordered. And then you can start doing map reduce over those types of things. So we're able to build all of these interfaces, and they actually found some additional interfaces which would be cool to add as well. And they added those not only to iObservable, but also back to iEnumerable. So we have some additional functionality that we'll be able to do on our standard link iEnumerable implementations as well. So let's take a little bit of a look at another way that we can use these observables. First, we did a cold observable, which was just a list that we already had, which we could do that with iEnumerables, no problem. Let's now take another data source or events, which are very similar to the observables in that we have the pub sub implementation. So we can take an event and make it an observable. Now we can start working on those as well and doing some really interesting things. So let's get back over to our code here. Before I do that, I do want to throw one more thing on here. And this is one of those additional methods that they, as I said, they included on the link implementations, both observable and enumerable. And that was here, do. And do says, while we're going through these values, just do something based off of that value. So here, do die, and then with the die, then I'm going to set the dies dot count to null. So I'll clear out the dot count as we're iterating over the results, or as the results are iterating over us. So now if I run this one, it'll just make it a little clearer when I go forward that whenever I push this roll or somehow roll the response, that it's clearing out and then showing you the values, right? Okay. So now we have that set up. Now how can we start doing this over events? Well, we have this button click, and the button click fires the events that we're going to be able to respond to. Now right now, we're having to state the query every single time we hit the button click. That might not be such a good thing. Maybe we'd like to declaratively say, whenever I get a roll click, then go ahead and do the query. So let's add a new data source here. I'm actually going to start it up here. Var roll requested. Observable from event. And this is going to be of a routed event args. And I'm going to say from the button, click, roll button, it's a click event. Give me an observable from those. Now that I have that data source, then I can say from roll and roll requested, then select many from the dice in the view, the dice we have. Again, the rest of the query, we don't change the rest of the query, all that's staying intact. We're now just adding another piece of this where clause, or the source. So anytime we get a button click, then we're going to do that. Now we don't want to have that actually wired up to the button click handler. We just want to establish that request whenever we start the application. So here I'm going to say whenever we navigate to this one, set it up. And whenever we navigate away from that, we need to then be able to tear it back down again, because we don't want the memory to be overloaded all the time and keep on adding to the memory footprint. So that's where I actually am setting this dice observer, because the scribe actually returns a idisposable. And so if we then hook something into that idisposable, and if we want to tear down the query result set, we dispose that disposable, and it's going to tear down all the query that we had set up before. So here I'm going to set up an dice observer, and I'm going to change. I've already done that one. I need to remove the handler here. And so on the distinction here is I'm going to add the dice observer equals the result of the subscribe. So now if I were to do this one, now every time I click the roll, I'm going to start getting a set of roll values coming back to me. And if I move away from it, it's going to dispose the whole query stack for me. If I come back in, it's going to recreate it again. Only once. Cool? Okay, so we're starting to compose a little bit more over this. It would be nice if we could compose some more things to this. So what could we continue to compose with this? Well, if I'm using this on a standard Windows application, that click interface makes some sense. But if we're doing this over the phone, maybe we have some other ways that we might be able to request a result that would come back, that might be a little bit more natural in natural user interfaces. So if I had a dice, you know, a bunch of dice, wouldn't it be nice if I could just shake that dice and roll them? Right? Well, doing a whole shake type of routine, it can be a little bit cumbersome to try to figure out sometimes. We have to figure out how much has this particular device moved. Has it moved enough times? Because if we just do this, that's not a shake. That's just an action. If we do this, we don't want it to detect a shake. But if we do this, maybe we want it to detect shake. Right? So what could we write in our code to detect shakes? Now, here's one of those cases where I'm going to show you a little bit of VB code. And what I'm going to use is the accelerometer, which is a device that's on the phone itself. And with the accelerometer, then I can use that same observable from events that we used with the button click. here, in this case, of accelerometer reading args, saying with the accelerometer that I'm getting in, whenever it has a reading changed, then do something with that. And I want to make sure that that reading changed has moved far enough to actually say, oh, this is a shake, or at least it's a motion that I want to look at. So here I'm going to say where the x has x to the power of 2 times the y to the power of 2 is greater than some minimum offset value. Then I've done it hard enough so that I'm actually doing what I'm going to call a knock, because I'm not necessarily shaking yet. I have, know that I have at least two of them in a close enough period of time. Similar to, do I have a click or a double click? Right? So here I have a knock. So now I need to say, with these movements, when do I actually have enough that I have at least two of them to make it a shake rather than just a knock? So here I'll say, dim shake equals from movement in movements. And actually, I want to say where that's happened within a small enough period of time. So I could track what was the time that the first one happened, what was the time that the next one happened, and the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And are each one of these within a short enough time? Well, they've added with the reactive extensions methods that will give a timestamp. And we'll also show you the values between times. So here I'm going to take the time interval. And that's going to give me an iObservable of these time intervals. And so I can then say from there where the movement interval total milliseconds is greater than some threshold that I've set up. And now I don't care about the actual what's happened in the accelerometer at this point. All I want to know is, has this happened? So here I'm going to then project out a new value, which is returning null or returning void. And this is sort of the way that you're going to do that, is saying, create me something that doesn't actually have anything in it, and then return that. So it's a new unit. And then with that, I can return the shake. Okay, so now how do I consume this? One of the reasons why I put this in VB and the other one in C# is to show you how you can take some of the pieces of code, put that off in the other separate libraries, and maintain your code better ways. Also, wanted to make sure that everybody knows that, yes, you can code against the phone with Visual Basic just the way you can in C#. So, got to throw that one in there. So let's go back to our query, and then we have our role requested. Well, another way that we might request a role is from a shake. So we're going to take our role requested and also merge that with that shake. Get shake observer. Okay, now there's a problem with this one, because shake observer is returning a iObservable of unit, and role requested is returning an iObservable of routed event args. If in order to do a merge, I have to have both of these sources be the same kind of thing. So here I'm going to just take a quick trick. And on this, I'm going to say select from the first one, also another given nothing, new unit. Yeah, really? Oh, I got to pass in the accelerometer here. I did a little dependency injection on the accelerometer so I could maintain whether it was start or stopped independently there. Okay, so now I have the ability to take two different data sources, and then whenever any one of them happens, I don't care what order, I don't care which ones happened, whenever I get one of those to happen, then go ahead and start giving me these values. So now I should be able to run this one, but I'm actually going to do this one on the device itself, because I can't shake my computer and actually do anything with this. So let's go ahead and run this one over on the device. I need to have this phone turned on. Yeah, not fast enough. Okay, can we see it? Now the numbers don't come out very well, do they? That that's not going to be good. So if you can't see the numbers on there, you can't really tell whether it's going to work or not. Well, just trust me, when I shake it, when I shake it, I get an error. Well, the errors occurred because in this particular case, the accelerometer on the phone actually works in a background process. And so we've actually gone over to a different thread. We just didn't know about it yet. So let's then go ahead and handle that inside of our shake observer that says shake.observe on the dispatcher. Okay. Now let's try running this one again. Go back over to the phone. And if I shake it, you can actually see the numbers there, can't you? Okay, if I shake it again, the numbers should change. Shake it again, the numbers are changing. If I keep, you may or may not notice that the numbers are changing too much, too many times. So if we have an epileptic that's going like this with our phone, we may or may not want them to actually be shaking it that many times. What can we do about that? Well, we have our ways of fixing that. We can then say on the shake, then, throttle it with some sort of a time span. Give it 250 milliseconds. And once 250 milliseconds have occurred, then make sure we get back on the dispatcher and... I'm in VB. I can't quite use that way. I have to do it this way. Okay. So then we can be able to throttle our requests and only get them every quarter of a second. And if they're shaking it too many times, then don't give it back until they finish shaking. Right? Cool? Some powerful stuff there, right? Okay. So that's one way that we can use this. We can also use our accelerometer here. Got a couple other examples here. Got a Windows Phone 7 accelerometer sample. And with this one, what I'm going to be able to do is I'm going to say, set up what's going to happen anytime I get a value. So in this particular case, anytime I get a value, then move a button around the screen. Well, if I'm doing this on the computer with the emulator, I can't necessarily move my computer around and have the button actually work some. So I might want to be able to emulate what that's going to do. So here I'm going to say, if I'm in the emulation mode, if I'm on the device, then give me the real one. If I'm not, then give me a mock one. And so you could be able to use this for testing purposes, for example. And because these observables are first-class objects rather than just events, we can do anything that we want with these first-class objects. We can use dependency injection. We can use IOC. Well, not as easily on the phone. There's some phone limitations that make it a little more challenging to do IOC sometimes. But we can have a factory that says, if it's doing one, do it one way. If it's doing something else, do it a different way. So the accelerometer, if we take it from the actual one, on the actual one, it's going to say, whenever I get a reading changed off of the events, and this is, there are two syntaxes for doing from event. The first one uses these quotes of the event name. The other one uses the add and remove handler methods to say, hey, what happens when I add one? What happens when I remove one? But you can use either one, and they both work the same way under the covers. And then I say, okay, so whenever I get one, then project out a new vector. The vector actually comes from the XNA libraries that come on the phone as well, and I can just interchange those inside of my Silverlight application here. And so give me a new value. Make sure that since we're getting it from the accelerometer, we're back on the dispatcher so that we don't have anything with the cross-thread going on there. So that's one option. What about a mock one? Well, with a mock one, I can say, well, every so many times, give me values. In this particular one, say, every 100 milliseconds, give me a new value that's going to come out. And so I generate that with the time, and then every 100 milliseconds, I'm going to create a new vector based off of the past vector value, right? So if I were to run this one on the device, and I need to run the right sample here. Debug, start new instance. Okay, so I can say click me, and then if I move this around, you notice the button is moving around on the screen a little bit, right? It's maybe a little hard to see. If I move it up, it moves the button up. If I move it down, it moves the button down, side to side, etc. So I'm able to use that off the accelerometer. If I were to stop this one and do that off of the emulator, wrong sample again. This one, start new instance. And if I click this one, it'll start moving it around as if it were mocked. Thank you. Okay, so I click the button and it moves it around. If I click it again, it moves it around. When I click it and it stops, that's when I've disposed it. So if I click it the second time, dispose it. If I click it the first time, create it again. Click it the second time, dispose it. And that's where it's setting up and tearing it down each time. Okay? So that's another case where you might be able to use these events. One other place that I've used events in here is inside of the business object that I have. Whenever I do that spin and say, select a new value in the spinner, then it's actually providing some events for us. And in this particular case, I think I want the integer looping data source. Yeah. So on the integer data source, I can then have it implement iNotify property change, which is going to work for data binding. But I can also implement iObservable if I wanted to then listen to things off of observable collections. And what do you have to do in order to do that one? Well, since this is a stateful object, I'm actually going to use one of those subjects to be the listeners. Whenever somebody subscribes to me, then I'm going to have the subject add that as a subscriber. And then every time that I have this notified change, then I'm going to say, okay, anybody that's listening over here, then call your on next and do something with it. Right? And so I can create that inside of my business objects if I wanted to. And you could use that although data binding doesn't respond to it at that point. So you still need to identify property change at this point for that. To then consume this one, if I go back to my main application here, that's the wrong main. That should be the one. So then I can merge in my side. So here I'm going to say, whenever the side count data source changes, again, project out a new unit. I don't care what its value is. I just want to say, did we get a request to make a change? And now if I run this one again, notice I haven't changed the rest of the query. The only thing that I've changed is what's actually calling for the requests. So now if I change the number of sides, it's rolling the number of dice again. Cool? This is how we're able to add more and more functionality to these types of requests. Questions at this point? So when we're composing over these events, these events are now first-class citizens. We can do everything that we could do with any other first-class object. We can dispose them. We can inject them through dependency injection. We can mock them. There's actually a case, one of the methods in reactive extensions is never, which says, this thing never happens. Well, they have full unit testing over the entire Rx framework. How do you test never? That's a little bit hard. They've actually come up with the concept of virtual time, and they have a test scheduler which does that, that says, okay, this never actually happens, so I'm going to be able to test that it never actually happened. Yeah, that's a little complex, and we're not going to get into the details of that one today. Again, there's another channel 9 video which goes over all of the virtual time type of stuff as well. But these are first-class events. We can pass them around and do anything that we want with these just as we would any other object, which we can't do with events. Right? So another area that we would probably want to be able to use this same kind of construct is going to be over services. Because all of the service requests and getting data from a data source of some sort, all of these service requests are going to happen asynchronously. And it would be nice if we could then incorporate these asynchronous service requests into the same pipeline and be able to then combine those requests in this as well. So here now we have a roll of the dice. We want to get the results from a service. Why? Well, maybe we're loading these dice and we don't want anybody to know that we're loading the dice. And if we had the loading of the dice code inside of our application that's built on the phone, somebody could probably go in and find out what that code is on the phone and say, oh, you're doing this. Not that I'm condoning this by any means. I might get thrown out of the casino if I were to say any of that, but it could happen. So how do we hide the fact that we're doing something that we don't want anybody to know about? And it could be proprietary information that we want to hide. We hide that behind a service tier, right? So we now want to take our dice roll and do that across a service tier. Doesn't matter how it's going to do it. So we're going to call begin roll dice and do this asynchronously so that whenever we get a value coming back, we'll turn this into an observable of the result value that's going to come back, right? Now, we do want to be careful when we're doing these requests over these boundary layers. For example, we don't want to keep rolling that dice too often and ask for too many requests. So we may want to be able to throttle the request somehow. Also, when we start getting results back, if they've asked to roll it again in the middle of the process of requesting it, and this actually happens more often if you do dictionary request or dictionary suggest, so that you're typing into Google or your favorite search engine some text, and then it'll start giving you results back, and then you start typing some more, then it shouldn't keep on giving you the values. It should go out and get a new set of values and ignore what it was requesting before. And so we might want to be able to throttle the requests that are coming back and also make sure that this all happens back on the UI thread. So how are we going to do that inside of our code? Well, we need to add a little bit more here. So now I'm going to start the beginning of this request back up again. And we'll say var service equals, I have a randomizer service, and it's going to be the new randomizer client. I need new as well there. Okay. So I have a new service. And then whenever we get those results requests, we want to make sure that those are observables. So var service observable. Observable. Dot. We had from event before, and we could listen to the event, which is the end request, but that's not necessarily going to line our request up with our response. Okay? If we want to be able to line those up, then we're going to use this from async pattern. And from async pattern is going to say, given some input value of some type, and the input's going to be an integer, and then we'll assert what the output value type is going to be, another integer. And then I'm going to say, okay, what was the begin invoke and end invoke of that request? So I then say SVC, and oh, there is no begin invoke inside of the proxy that gets generated by the phone. Nor is there in Silverlight as well. Well, actually there is. Here's a little trick for you. I'm going to change this, and instead of inferring the actual value, I'm going to set it to the underlying interface. So in this particular case, randomizer service, iRandomizer. And the iRandomizer actually returns the begin invoke and invoke. So now that I have that one, I can say, okay, so our begin invoke is begin roll, and our end invoke is end roll. So now I have an observable that's going to be the results that are coming back. How do I wire that in? Well, here I'm going to say from another data source, from request in service observable. Okay. And what this is going to say, what it's asking for now is, you said that there was an integer that's coming in. I need to pass it that value coming in. And I'm going to pass it the number of sides that we've selected in our view model. So app view model side count. Okay. And now I can say select here, instead of doing my local randomization, do the request value. And now we're going to be asking for these requests off of a web service rather than locally. So at this point, I actually... see here, do I still have that in there? No. Yeah. I don't even need this observe on thread pool anymore. because the service is going to handle its own threading implementations on the backside. And so now if I roll, I'm actually rolling this over a service request boundary. And just to show you that we're actually getting some other values here, let me add a couple more dice here. Now, there's a bit of a problem. Notice that it's still going here, because I've issued it multiple requests, so it's going out and doing all those multiple requests. I was a little anxious in my button click there, so let's tweak this just a little bit so that when we do another button request, stop what you were doing on the last one, and we're going to start it again. And to do that one, we're just going to say, from the service, take it until we have another role requested. So here we're doing another kind of join between two observables collections. And we may also want to say, in this particular case, that we want to throttle the role requests. And since we did a throttle there, we're going to have to make sure that we get back on the dispatcher. And so now I should have it. Go ahead and bump the count up here again so you can see a little bit more of them. Okay, so I issue a request, and it starts coming back asynchronously. Notice it comes back in whatever order it's coming back in. It's completely asynchronous. And what it's basically doing is, back on the service, if the result is higher, it's going to wait longer. If the result is lower, it's going to wait less. So if I do this one, and I do it a lot of times, notice it doesn't do another roll until I stop. And now it only gets the results back once. If I do a roll request, and halfway through I do another roll request, that take until is going to say, ignore the values that we had coming back, and let's do another one. So we can do some really complex types of things in a relatively short period of time in our code. And our code, I mean, that's all the code that we've really worked with here. We've done a lot of extensions to that initial code, right? And if you wanted to, sure, we could take this method and refactor that into a separate method, and so our code can become even more maintainable and isolate each one of these tiers off. It's really powerful and amazing stuff, I think. Okay, so that's sort of some of the things that we can do with Reactive. Where can we use Reactive extensions? Here are a couple of examples that I think, I mean, like factories, anytime we have sensors that are saying, okay, things are moving this way, things are moving this way, did it go outside of some sort of a bounds? Is the value that's coming across too big? Is my heart beating too fast? Right? We can have observable types that comes up there. With a phone, touch and move gestures. There's a classic example that you'll see, which is click and drag. And I have a blog post that shows how click and drag, the code that's behind click and drag, it's almost the same way you would explain it to your grandmother if you tried to. That's what the code looks like. That's pretty powerful. Right? Stock tickers. These values that are coming across. We don't know when the next value is going to come. We just handle it whenever it happens. Ignore those we don't care about. Deal with the ones that we do want to. The other one's a picture of the space shuttle. If you want to do it in aeronautics, why not? Am I going to go into a stall? I might want to know about it. You know, we don't have to stave this value and then query that in the database. Handle it as it's happening. Another one we have up there, the one with the guy with the skull and crossbones up there. Are you here? Huh? They're actually supposed to be here for the conference, and so they may be somewhere else. This is a NAVI project that I found out about. It's education or university in Germany. And what they've done is they've taken Kinect and are using it for the vision impaired to be able to navigate them around obstructions and things like that. So if you happen to say you're walking around with Kinect on a helmet, they're actually using RX under the covers to manage all of the requests that are coming on off of Kinect, which is kind of cool, right? Now, I'm sure you probably can come up with all sorts of different areas that I haven't necessarily stated here, but this sort of gets your feet wet on what can you do, where could you use it, where might it be powerful. Should you use it for a simple one-off web service request? Probably not. But if you have these much more complex kinds of things you're trying to put piece together, that's where the power of Rx really comes to play. I did the asynchronous service. I'm going backwards here. That's why you're seeing the slides again. Okay, so you were excited about this. You want to start working with it more. Here's some resources for you. First place, go to the Rx Data Development Center. That's the link to it. I used to have a bit.ly, but I unfortunately made the bit.ly to the Spanish version instead of the English version, and I couldn't change it. So that's the direct link to the Rx Data Development Center. It's on MSDN. It's fully supported on there. Also, the Reactive Extensions team blog. They'll blog any announcements of changes that they have to the framework. And also Channel 9, if you go to the Rx tags off of Channel 9, there are lots and lots of videos by the product teams, which are really getting into the covers of why does this work this way, why do we decide to make it work this way, and things like that. So these are some great resources. In the Rx Data Development Center, you can actually download the bits from that link. So if you wanted to get the links, that's one way to get it. And so the first thing I'd recommend if you want to start playing with this is get the bits. If you have the phone SDK, you already have some of the bits. You have the bits to work with the phone. Everything that I was doing here comes directly on your phone ROM. I didn't download anything else. If you want to do it from any of the other platforms, then you can either go to the Data Development Center and download it from there, or they've incorporated with NuGet so that you're able to use the NuGet Extension Manager to get those libraries and include those inside of your application as well. If you're excited about this, I recommend you go over to Bart's talk tomorrow afternoon. It's going to be in Laguna. He's going to be talking about the JavaScript version of Reactive Extensions. Should be very interesting to see how that fits into there. And also, I recommend you join in the community. Get out there, go on the forums, find out what people are talking about, play with it, give feedback to the team. The team is paying attention. They are watching the forums. They've made a lot of changes over a period of time on things that they found from the forums. So get involved. I hope I've given you a lot of excitement around this. I'm excited about it. I'm not going to say super excited. Well, I just did. Sorry. As I said, I'm going to be posting, not currently there, but I'll be posting these bits on thinklink.com, so you'll be able to download the bit, start playing with it, find out what works, what may have been broken about it. Also, feel free to follow me on Twitter, Jim Woolley. I hope that that's given you a lot of excitement here. We might have time for a couple of questions. Any questions at this point? Come on up to the microphone.
Just a real quick question about the from event. When you pass over the string event name, is there a way to do that in a more type-safe way or non-magic string way?
Yeah, that's. I showed you in another example where you have the add handler, remove handler sides.
Okay.
Okay. And that's the way you would do it with type-safe way.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Okay.
Let me go ahead and say, make sure to fill out your surveys before we finish off the questions. I'm not so interested, although I love to get high scores, but I really am interested in your feedback. So feel free to write on those and let me know what it was you thought about this, how we can improve the discussion as well. And, okay, let's keep on going with the questions then.
Given that you can express any IEnumerable as just a cold IObservable that then ends right away, why should you use enumerables rather than IObservables?
Interesting question. If you don't need that overhead of going through the whole process of the observable and you can just work with it directly as enumerable, why worry about doing all the casting and wrapping? Because there is some work that goes under the covers. You don't get all of this for free, and there is performance overhead that you're going to suffer from that. So if it's native enumerable and everything else you're working with is enumerable, stay on the enumerable side. There's also, I said there was a two observable, there's also observable.toEnumerable to go back and forth both ways.
You mentioned the composability is where this really gets into its own strength, but I wonder if you could contrast with the async stuff coming in C Sharp and the framework.
Yeah, with the question had to do with the new stuff that's coming in C Sharp 5 and VB 11. Throw that one in. They have the async types of stuff that are coming in those two languages. That gets to be more imperative rather than declarative. Okay. And so you're setting up internally inside of those as well, internal state machines. And some of it has to do with how do you think about your code. Another one of it has to do with the async stuff doesn't do the composability quite so well, right? It'll set up a single pipeline, a single state machine. But trying to compose multiple data sources that are, you know, how do those mesh in together? That's where Rx gives a lot more power in that regard. Additionally, with the language enhancements, you have the await and async keywords. And there's also a little bit you can do with error handling. But you don't have the rich capability of being able to do all of these other fine-grained things, like the timestamps and the time intervals and all these time-based operations, which async needs to be aware of. Because it's very possible with async that you have a value that comes down and another value that starts coming down while the first one's working. The second one actually comes down first and finishes before the first one does. And so your values may not come back in the same order that you thought they were originally. Right? And how do I deal with that? And those are some of the kinds of things which these additional methods can handle. And since it is all method-based, extension method-based, if you want to extend it and add more features to it, have at it. You can't do that with a language compiler thing, right? At this point, at least.
Hi. To begin with, you mentioned that you could use it for XNA as well. Since XNA is mostly game development, which kind of scenarios would you be using React extensions for?
The beginning of that was again?
XNA.
Oh, XNA. That's a good question, right? Because with XNA, everything's timer loop rather than event-based. I'm still trying to figure that out in my head to a certain extent. One area would be like accelerometer, where the accelerometer isn't giving you values back in a timer loop. It's giving you values back in an event loop, right? And so how do you then get the accelerometer values and then deal with those, again, with the things that are coming back off of other things that you want to process? You know, collision detection, that kind of thing. That might be where it would fit with the XNA. It's been a little bit of a struggle for me to try to figure exactly where that plays. I think it's more fringe in XNA, but I think there is a particular place where it can be useful there. And it depends. I think it's really more what is the source of data that you're getting. Is the source of data an event, which there aren't many of them in XNA, but some of the additional libraries you may bring into XNA may give those. Right? Any other questions? Yes, sir. Yeah, I was data binding everything here. Yeah. So the question has to do with data binding and how do we data bind lists? Yeah. So the question has to do with data binding and how do we deal with the lists that it may be observable and data bind to those observables and things like that. Well, I was showing everything here was using data binding and we're using a list of dice, right, which are observables, and we're also getting service requests and things like that which are observables. Essentially, with the data binding, you do have to do iNotify property changed. It doesn't necessarily work directly with that data binding, but you can combine the two of those to work together. I think when you take a look at these examples, you might get more of a clear idea of where that's going to come into play. Another scenario, I've talked with somebody who's doing baseball stats off of OData services, and he needs to chunk the values that are coming back. Well, you may be able to have, every time you get another set of chunks back, use the observables to say, okay, keep doing that, take until we don't have any more values, right? And then as we take in the next value, put that into a observable collection. Observable collection, anytime you add a value to the observable collection, then that calls notify property changed or the collection changed, which does data binding back to those. Yeah. So you can do that kind of thing too. Right. Good questions. Okay, I'm going to cut it off at this point. I'll be down in the Ask the Experts, I guess in probably about 5 minutes or so. Actually, I think it's at 5 o'clock, so I'll be in the Ask the Experts. I'll be around through the rest of the conference. If you have questions, feel free to catch me in the hallways and ask the questions, and I look forward to hearing from you, and I thank you for your time.